Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football, as always, this week. We have Keely Yore back on the show. Follow her on Twitter, at Keely is my name, or you can follow her on the Peristyle as well. If you have any questions or comments for us here on the show, please email us, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call or text us at 424-254-9141. But we'd prefer if you have one of those Apple devices, go to your Apple Podcasts app. Please subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. Any questions, feedback, suggestions you have for the show, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions, we'll bump you right up to the top of the list. And I know Keely's been looking at these reviews, so we're going to talk to her right now and see what you guys had to say. First of all, welcome in, Keely. How are you doing today?
Hello, Ryan. Doing well. How are you doing?
You know, cannot complain. We're, what, year two of the pandemic now, or year four or something? I'm not sure where we are.
Year 10. Not sure.
I remember like last year, March went by like super slow, and then other months kind of like flew by. But it's sort of like you're like expecting a lot in 2021, and here we are. It feels a lot like last year.
Yeah. I'm going into this year with zero expectations. That way I can be pleasantly surprised if anything good happens. How about that?
Yeah. Well, check that out. Well, do we have any new reviews, Keely?
We do. We have actually two new reviews. First off, it's from Michael from San Francisco, who gave us a 5-star review and said, "Excellent podcast. I came across USCFootball.com about 4 to 5 years ago, and I've been hooked ever since. The podcast, as well as everyone involved, are excellent. Love it." So thanks, Michael, for that.
Thanks, Michael.
And then we have another 5-star review from Polly Wog, who actually included a question. His title, though, was "Missing Our Man Dan." We all are Polly Wog. But he says, "Who are the top candidates to replace Aaron Osmus and Tim Drevno? Love the show. Paul from Valencia."
Ah, okay. So sort of like getting into the meat of things.
Yeah, right off the
right
bat.
Away. So what I would say first is I would recommend all of you go and subscribe to uscfootball.com if you're not already. VIP membership, you can do it for $1, so it's really cheap. Get in there, your first month for $1. If you want to do an annual, they're doing 30% off right now, so it's a great deal. Make sure you go check it out, and you'll read stuff every week in the War Room. Every Friday we put more information about the searches and stuff in there. We also have a offensive line coach hot board that we've done a couple of versions of. Keely dropped some scoop this week. You know, different candidates that have come up for the job. USC is definitely out there doing some interviews and stuff. Don't expect it to be the same old searches you've seen from USC in the past. It's different. It's the searches, the coaches' searches have been different since Mike Bone came into play a little over a year ago, and these searches will be a little bit different as well. I think you'd probably agree, Keely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as we've seen with how they went through Dante Williams hire and other coaches last season, it's going to be different. It's not going to be the old Heritage Hall where everything leaked every 2 seconds. We knew every move they were making. Both Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna really want to keep things in their inner circle and want to keep things quiet, not only just to manage leaks, but also to give them a competitive advantage in that sense. So if you hear leaks, it's probably coming from the other side of things in these interviews and negotiations and whatnot. So I think for USC fans, they should be encouraged that it's different, that there isn't a lot of info out there, because if you want different results, you're going to have a different process. And so that's what we've seen so far.
And I think more important than just that part of the process, which is certainly important, but when you're doing a more buttoned up approach and there's analytics involved and there's just logic, there's not, well, we know that guy, you know,
he
knows how we do things. Let's get him. That was the old way. And I don't think you're going to see the new way be like that. Like a guy like a Mike Goff is on the list. And You know, he was at USC, and that's like what you would think before. Oh, he was at USC, just bring him on in. Now, his resume has been really good since then, and he's getting, you know, rave reviews. So it doesn't preclude you from hiring someone that's been around the program, but that can't be the only requirement. I think that's the biggest difference is, you know, what I always say is like, I don't want anyone that doesn't know the fight, you know, that knows the fight song. Do not bring anyone that knows the fight song. A guy like Mike, like, he looks like he'd be a pretty good candidate, and he knows the fight song. It's okay. I don't think this administration is worried, number one, do they know the fight song? That's what the old administrations were. They need to know how we do things. And I think that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, the sense I get is, okay, well, who's the best candidate? Who's the best fit for the existing staff we have right now? And then they're going to go out and try and find that person. So that's what we've seen, or at least got the sense from. And I think they're continuing it on this round of searches, but they're still in the interview process right now. I know there's a report that came out on Sunday about USC offering the job, the offensive line job, to Arkansas's Brad Davis. I got more clarity on that from a source. Apparently, like, Brad Davis was interviewed, but they never got to the offer stage. There were never numbers discussed or anything like that. So the sense I got was that was kind of maybe like an agent leaking that out maybe a little bit and trying to boost his guy up, because it was very, very early stages for Davis. So I know the P kind of took that and ran with it. It was like, oh, well, he turned down USC. And that's not the sense I got from talking to a couple sources. So, you know, that was one of the updates, but other than that, they're still in the interview process and they're still trying to vet everyone right now. So, and like we said last week, it's going to take some time because they definitely want to make sure that they're doing things right and getting the best candidate. So it's still a process right now.
Yeah. But make sure you check out the Peristyle. We'll have updated information as we get it. We'll keep talking to sources, figure out what's going on there. But I think if you're a USC fan, just feel confident that it's going to be, it's not a guarantee that you're going to get a great hire for either of those spots, but the process is going to be much better. And I think your chances of landing somebody very good, it just goes up a lot when you have competent people running the search, which USC hasn't had for many, many years. So that's a good thing.
Sorry, Ryan.
No, you're
no,
you're
no. Fine. And I think I mentioned this last podcast, but I think there's something to be said for, we always hear in the little statements that they give out, like, oh, Mike Bone has provided resources. And that's something that I've kind of picked up on, is that, like, back in the day, USC, even though they wanted to retain Clay Helton, they wouldn't want to really open the purse strings to let him move things around or get maybe the best. So it sounds like this new administration is at least more willing to spend money to get, if you want the best, you have to spend a good amount of money. And so I feel like this administration is more willing to do that, where the sense I got is that last administration didn't fully want to do that or fully want to support Helton in that sense. So I think that's why you see those breadcrumbs in those statements that USC like gives out about, oh, Bone is supporting Clay Helton. That's what it means, is that they're actually giving him financial support to try and match the top universities, because college football has evolved so much. And I don't think the old administration in Heritage Hall wanted to keep up with that financially, you know? So I think it's different this time around in that sense as well.
Yeah. The old administration was sort of behind the times for like the way college football used to be, but the name and all that stuff kind of kept you in there. And if you got a perfect coach and everything works out, you can still win. Then the landscape changed, and you know, USC was behind before, and now they're way behind. So this is sort of an effort to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. And I think if Clay Helton's head coach for the next 10 years or next 6 months, you need to build a better infrastructure around the football program. So I think that's what they're doing right now.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, let's, we want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's, before we roll into the rest of the show. Hopefully you guys have been checking it out. I've been going a couple times a week now. I'm going a little bit more than maybe I was before, but just going in there. And if you like, if you have to, you know, there's birthdays and stuff happening now. You got these COVID birthdays. You want to drop off a gift at like a friend's porch. I recommend, if you want to go in to Trader Joe's, your friend likes wine. They have little wine gift bags right in the wine section. You kind of find a nice bottle of something you like. You can put it in the gift bag. Boom. You got your instant present right there. And I always like trying different stuff because there's a lot of good wines. You can, you know, various prices, a lot of cheap wines that taste really good. And I saw that someone grabbed, I think it's called Petiole Pinot Noir, which I've been drinking some Pinot Noir lately, Keely, but it's P-E-T-I-O-L-E. It's got a little like orangish, yellowish label. And man, it was really good. It's like $8.50 or so. It was like $9, like less than $9. And I saw a lady grab a couple of bottles and I asked her, I'm like, hey, do you like that? She's like, oh yeah, me and my husband love it. And like, and then another lady behind me grabbed it too, because she goes, my husband's brand, I don't see it anymore. I'm going to grab this too. So we all like bought this. And man, it was really good. So if you want to go check it out, you know, friendly people, keep your distance, but you know, you can get some advice from people buying wines. I like doing that. Just like, hey, what do you like? If someone grabs like six bottles or something, you're like, all right, they know what they're doing here, I think.
Yeah. Wow. You're making friends at Trader Joe's, Ryan. You got to trust the ladies who go for like multiple bottles of wine. They know what's up for sure.
Yeah. It was like double fist, like boom, like I grabbed them like, oh yeah, I want to get some of that. So, but the gift thing's great. Like, they got the little gift bags right there. So, and if you want, you can put little flowers next to it. You get from Trader Joe's. So you want to do the social distancing gifts that you can drop off on somebody's porch. Boom. I did that this weekend. So that was good.
There you go. Well done.
Yeah. We do what we can. All right. Well, we talked a little bit about it. The offensive line coaching search. Haven't heard as much on the strength and conditioning search. You know, definitely being conducted, like Keely said, I think trying to keep things a little closer to the vest. I think it's significant, you know, moving off of an Aaron Osmus. And I feel like if you, when we were being critical, Keely, of, hey, these are the guys that fixed problems 2 years ago, why are you fixing the problems again? Yeah. The feeling I'm getting from the administration is, well, the athletic department was a different department 2 years ago. So when you fixed the problem, you didn't really have the support of the athletic department. Now you do. So you can sort of refix those problems. And I think it seems like in their mind, like, that's fine. Like, we're, you know, that's pre-Mike Bone. You know, anything pre-Mike Bone wasn't necessarily fixed. And I think that's true. But still, Kalil's head coach, and these are problems you fixed 2 years ago, and now you got to fix them again. I like that the department is supporting him and you know, going out there and helping find, you know, good assistant coaches to put around Clay Helton. It's just, I still just have an issue with, why is this happening again 2 years, you know, 2 years later?
Yeah. I mean, from the outside, if you just look at that, you're like, okay. And the whole, we've talked about it so many times, the Notre Dame quote unquote rebuild, but it's very delayed and takes 3 years to do so. You know, it's not a successful process. And that's why I think it's hard to judge all of this, just because it just seems very poorly done. But then you have new guys coming in and trying to create a better system and a better foundation. So I think that's why you have to kind of hold judgment, even though this has been such a long process for USC fans to quote unquote fix what's going on. And then, you know, they look at it and they're like, well, Clay Helton's still the coach, so it won't really be fixed. And I understand that to a certain degree. But yeah, I think the sense you're getting is right, Ryan. I think they look at it like, hey, yes, this looks bad in the long trajectory, but we weren't here and we want to fix it. So I think that's what they're trying to do. And I know Helton actually has, I know people are trying to say that Helton doesn't have any real say in the staff or personnel with this new administration, but he also has input as well. So I've heard that he's had input to strengthen the strength and conditioning coach, because he'll work directly with him. You know, obviously that's an important pick for the head coach. So he is getting choices for this, but will the head coach, or will the strength and conditioning coach still stay on if they do make a head coaching change? That's something that I haven't really got a sense of. And is that, because, you know, usually strength and conditioning coaches are tied to a head coach. So is this a temporary fix? Like, that's what I can't really figure out, Ryan, is like, why are you making this decision when you might make a choice at head coach later down the line? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I feel like just the gut feeling I'm getting is that there's really an effort to build up as much infrastructure around the football program as possible and in the football program, no matter who the head coach is. And if it's, like I said, if it's Clay Helton for the next decade, or if he, you know, he has one more season or half a season or whatever it is left, they still want to have good pieces in place around him. And I, you know, my gut feeling is more of, say you bring in an offensive coach, you know, and he's running, you know, like what, something like what Nick Rolovich runs, like a run and shoot, you're probably not keeping Graham Harrell. Maybe you keep some of the offensive assistants. He might want to keep all the defensive assistants, because they really, it was an upgrade of what USC had before. They might want to keep Sean Snyder, who's a special teams guru. You know, they might want to keep the new strength and conditioning coach, whoever that is. Or it could be you bring in a defensive-minded guy, and they do blow out, you know, the defensive staff that was brought in, or maybe keep a couple of guys or whatever it is. And you might keep the, you know, the air raid-ish kind of stuff with Graham Harrell and the rest. I feel like they're doing it so it's not like, okay, whoever, if they have to replace a head coach in a year or so, you don't necessarily need to blow all the assistants out. You have really good assistants almost everywhere now, if not everywhere, or they will. And that's an upgrade from where it was before. And I think in their mind, it could be a more attractive landing space for, you know, for anyone that would want to come in and take the job. And they might not keep all of them. What if you keep half, you know? I don't think if you had fired Clay Helton like 2 years ago, new coach is not probably keeping half the staff. They're probably getting rid of everybody. You know, if they hired someone in 2021, there's a lot of reasons to keep a lot of the staff if they wanted to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think the largest point that we keep making is they're just trying to make a better foundation, and that's what they can do in the meantime because they're kind of handcuffed with the whole Clay Helton decision, as we've said before. You know?
Yeah. We talked about that before. I don't know. Does that come up?
We've never talked about Clay Helton before, ever, at all. No one wants to know about that.
Yeah. Little transfer portal news. I think the last time since we talked, what was it? Jalen McKenzie decided he was going to stay, and Damon Johnson. We talked about that a little bit on the Harvey Hyde podcast. So we've covered it on the podcast, but we didn't mention it here. No real surprises there, right? But I thought we'd get some more seniors making announcements, yes, but so far nothing.
Yeah, we still have, I believe, 5 days until you have to declare if you're going to leave. So we'll see. I know Isaiah Polamau was a name that kept coming up about whether or not he'll go. Earlier, closer to the Pac-12 championship game, I was told that he was one of the guys who will go. And now I got an update last week that he's now on the fence, not fully sure if he should go. I know some people think that he still needs to develop a little bit more before he tries to go to the next level. So we'll see. But the fact that he's kind of backed off from a sure, hey, I'm going to leave to now I'm on the fence, I think that's kind of notable. And Jalen McKenzie, for him to announce that he was coming back, he's a guy who I heard a little bit of transfer portal rumors for him, which didn't fully make sense to me, but that was something that I was hearing. And so the fact that he decided to return, at least is big for USC's offensive line depth, just because they're still trying to put those pieces together. And now you have ABT definitely gone for next season. So the fact that you get Jalen McKenzie back is good, at least for the puzzle piece that USC will have to try and come up with. And then I don't know if you mentioned it already, Ryan, but Marquis Stepp decided to commit to Nebraska. And as I mentioned before, he was a guy who he didn't feel like a guy who would put his name in the portal and somehow come back to USC. He just seemed like he was ready to move on. And Steph had kind of always felt like a Big Ten back to me a little bit. So I think he will do well. I kind of peruse the Nebraska sites, and I think they have some young running backs. So he might be a good fit for Steph in that sense. So obviously we wish him all the best in his future endeavors. But yeah, some newsier items involving the transfer portal and guys leaving and staying and whatnot.
Yeah. So Marquis Stepp to Nebraska, I think it makes sense. He's, you know, he's a Midwestern kid. He's a big bruising back, never seemed to fit, even though he was a fan favorite. I mean, what did we get more like? Okay. We get the most like complaints about Clay Helton. Second, I mean, it might be about Marquis Stepp. I don't know. Like we get other complaints. You know, but now the air raid, there's been a lot of complaints this year. But, you know, why is it Marquis Stepp getting more touches was like a thing for quite a while.
Yeah, definitely in 2019. And that's why it's bad for USC to lose Stepp. It's just because he was such a unique back for USC. USC needs that power back to just kind of burst through maybe not the biggest holes that USC's offensive line is making for him. So USC definitely is going to miss some power in that sense. And I understand why he was a fan favorite. But it's also worth noting that he had a hard time staying healthy throughout his career. That was something that just injuries after injuries lingered. And even in his high school career, he had lingering hamstring issues. So I think it's twofold. You know, I think he could have been used better, but also he wasn't healthy for a large part of his Trojan career. So it's kind of unfortunate in that sense that he never found his stride really in this offense.
Yeah. Well, we wish him the best. I mean, he is a great kid, and it's someone that you kind of want to see, you know, do well somewhere. And you know, that's going to be one of those things we're going to – he has like a 150-yard game for Nebraska next year. Like, we're going to hear about it on the Peristyle for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, just like sort of like the JT Daniels stuff, which is really strange because, you know, people just trash JT Daniels and we're like, oh, he's terrible. Why would you even talk, you know, about him like you guys have? We were like, no, I think we said he's good. He goes to Georgia and like doesn't play right away. Like, see, we told you he sucked. Then he does well at Georgia. Like, why did we let him go? Clayton's an idiot. And you're just like, okay, like, I don't know what to tell you guys.
Exactly.
But with, yeah, so we wish Marquis Stepp the best. Last sort of like newsy thing, the final AP poll came out. Keeley, does it matter? No, unless you're number one.
No.
But USC was number 21. Not too much. But in the way too early polls, like the one we have up on CBS right now, USC's tied for 12th. I think with Miami or something. I forget who it was. But yeah, like above Oregon. I don't know. To me, Keeley, like, USC is going to be a less talented version in 2021 than they were in 2020. So I'm having a harder time picturing USC moving up in the polls from where they are right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is just the case of USC's brand power doing its thing. I think a lot of people, especially on the East Coast, don't fully watch every game or look at the details of each USC game. So I think it's easy to be like, oh, we need a West Coast team. Oh, USC, that's a good brand. And so I think that's what you're saying, because I think some of the guys who made the way too early polls who actually watch these things closely, I think Stuart Mandel didn't even have USC ranked in the way too early poll. So I think guys who've seen what USC kind of is at a more detailed level didn't have USC as high, whereas people who kind of just see the broad, hey, they're talented, Keaton Slovis is coming back, kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt and ranked them pretty high. So I think this is just a case of the brand power doing its thing for USC.
I think you nailed that. I think that's exactly right. It's one of those things where you got to rank a West Coast team. Oregon looked like doo-doo, I guess you could say. Is that the technical term in their bowl game? Even though USC looked like doo-doo the week before playing against Oregon. But so I think overall, like looking at 2021, we'll have plenty of time to do that between now and then. I do think you're losing some huge playmakers, right? There's some big playmakers that are gone, but there's, you know, still a bunch of talent on this team. My gut is that like Oregon will pass USC in the 24/7 sports, you know, talent composite. That was sort of a transition year for Oregon. Like they had to replace the whole offensive line, Justin Herbert, all that stuff. They still won the conference. Weird way, but they won. USC did not. USC had way better players, in my opinion. I think they're going to be less talented. And maybe, you know, they'll be better coached with the new offensive line coach. Maybe they'll be better prepared with a new strength and conditioning coach. I think that's what they're thinking. The schedule is going to be significantly easier than it was supposed to be for 2020. Now, San Jose State, no joke, right? They're a legit team. That was a replacement game for UC Davis. So you just pick a team that's undefeated, which is interesting. And then, you know, they had to go through a lot, obviously, going playing up in Humboldt and all that stuff. They persevered for sure. And, you know, you still got to play Notre Dame, was a playoff team. But, you know, you're not playing Oregon. You're not playing Washington. Those games are off the schedule. So I think it's a, you know, last year was going to be tough for USC to even go like 8-4, I think, like the original schedule. You know, this year, like 9-3 is probably, you know, pretty reasonable, like even if you don't play that well. You know, we'll see what ends up happening. But I don't know if your expectations changing much, Keeley. I just think it's not going to be as talented, and they're still probably going to lose some games that they shouldn't. But the schedule is just not as hard. Just like this year, the schedule wasn't very hard. And the only real game they played, they lost, you could argue, you know. And, you know, they lose another name next year probably, you know. But, like, I don't know if they're going to be losing a whole bunch of games. Like, the Pac-12 is just not very good.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have still the same concerns I had coming into this season. You know, what is USC's offensive line? What is it going to look like in 2021? I think that's where the biggest talent drop off is going to happen. And so I don't think I can fully predict how 2021 is going to go until we know what the final staff will look like. If they get some world beater offensive line coach, which I don't think there are many out there to begin with, but if they do, who can develop players and develop them pretty quickly, then maybe we're more optimistic about this USC team. But I think it's hard when you have a new coach coming in, you have less talent on the offensive line. What is that going to look like? I don't know. And then I think something that I didn't think about coming into 2020 was, what will Keaton Slovis look like in 2021? That was something where we had high expectations coming into the season. And now it's like, okay, does he have kind of the mental toughness or figured out the arm technique or whatever was going on in 2020? Is that fixed? Has Graham Harrell worked on that? Have they worked on that over the offseason? And does he look more like the Keaton Slovis of freshman year versus his kind of sophomore slump we saw? So I think those are the key factors for me. And I think Todd Orlando proved that more time with his scheme, more practices, I think this defense will look good. And so I think the main concerns for me coming in is the offensive line, Keaton Slovis performance, and maybe what happens to the middle linebackers, the inside linebackers, that depth, and do you get Solomon Tuiala-Pupu back, stuff like that. So, I mean, speaking of way too early, it's way too early to start predicting what the 2021 team will look like or how they'll do, but there are some definite concerns coming into this next season.
Yeah. So we'll have plenty of time to discuss all that stuff.
Yeah.
Just a sneak preview, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. We do a little sneak preview of what's going on. Okay. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and answer some questions. So back in a minute.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle podcast, and here's my favorite drop.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death.
Yeah, not for us, though. We love listening to our audience because it's fun, and especially, Keely, during the off season. You know, we need different topics to talk about. So, you know, maybe they get a little overused. We hear the same ones a few times, but that's okay. We love to hear from the listeners, and thanks to everyone that sent in their emails and texts and voice. We got one voicemail today. I don't know why don't we start with a couple of the emails, Keely? Where do you want to start?
Sure. Let's start with our buddy, Stephen Poway, who sent an email to the both of us. He said, "Dear Ryan and Keely, as I watched the national championship game tonight, I couldn't help but think about how huge the gap is between USC and those two teams. I hate to say it, but I don't think USC would have ever had a prayer against either team. Alabama has depth at every position, is very well coached, and their offensive play calling under Coach Sark was brilliant. Do you think President Carol Folt was watching tonight and thinking the same thing I was? Or do you think football is no longer a priority for USC? Steve in Poway."
Yeah. well, Steve, okay. I don't think Carol Folt was watching. I don't think it's going to impact her decision at all. I do think USC could not hang with either one of those teams. I think it might have been the AP, like Dan Greenstein with the AP, like tweeted that, yeah, Oregon was supposed to play Ohio State. USC was supposed to play Alabama. And neither of those teams would have been, they would have been blown off the field. And I agree with that 100%. There are teams that were devastated by the coronavirus and the pandemic. And there were teams that benefited. And I would 100% say USC benefited, because this would have been an exposure year had USC had to play the original schedule, normal circumstances. I just feel like it was going to be not pretty from what I saw on the field. It was a miracle 5-1 finish, 5-1 season. But Notre Dame, Alabama were not winnable games from what I saw. This was... You needed this offense to like take the next step and be elite after being really good in 2019. It didn't happen. You weren't going to win games like that. So yeah, this is, you're right. I mean, there is a huge chasm between where USC is and where those teams are. And when you're talking about championships, like, I feel bad that what USC was talking about as far as a championship goes is that weird game in the Coliseum that we saw, the Oregon confetti and all that stuff that was just not really well played, and someone was going to end up winning, and Oregon is, you know, what, 4-3, and they're the Pac-12 champions or whatever it is. If you compare that, like, that's, you're calling that a championship, and then what we saw Monday night, that's a different championship. Like, there's a chasm between those. So I don't like just the word we're playing for championships, because it just does a disservice to what we saw Monday night. That was a Ohio State team that played without a lot of dudes. We saw, I mean, even like the Cleveland Browns played without their offensive coordinator, their head coach, all these guys. There was an offensive lineman that Baker Mayfield met that day. Like, literally, like, they talked that morning. And they blew out my Steelers. So, I mean, the people were able to navigate problems from this pandemic. USC's problems this year weren't because of the pandemic. They were helped by the pandemic. And there is a huge difference between the Alabamas and the Ohio States of the world and anything in the Pac-12, and certainly USC.
Yeah, well said, Ryan. I completely agree. I mean, I don't think to say that they were helped by the pandemic. I think there was a lot of hurdles that the USC team had to jump through, especially being in LA County. So that's the one caveat I'll have. But I do think if this season plays out without COVID, the regular season we saw, we're talking about a new, we're doing a head coach hop forward instead of offensive line hop forward. I think it just plays out completely differently, because there's no way that USC would have been able to even keep up with the Alabamas and the Notre Dames of this season. So yeah, USC definitely got lucky with that sense. But I know that people in USC's athletic department were paying attention to the game and knew the quality of plays and players that they were seeing on Monday. So, I mean, it's not like the athletic administration doesn't pay attention to the college football world. But like I've said before, as far as Carol Folt and the higher-ups at USC, I don't know if football is necessarily a priority in that sense. So it's kind of twofold in that sense. But yeah, it's I turned on the game and I was like, this is really nice football. And I was like, I forgot what it's like to really watch like such excellent football. Of course, they're the two top teams, but it was a fun game to watch in that sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I thought it was Pac-12, like a Pac-12 crew earlier. I thought someone said that on Twitter, and then it ended up not being a Pac-12 crew. It was like a Big 12 crew, because there was like no penalties for a while. I was like, this can't be a Pac-12 crew. And then it wasn't. Like,
there's,
oh, okay,
no way. Yeah. There's no way. Exactly.
Yeah.
We have an email from Lloyd who says, how much input does Graham Harrell have in recruiting offensive linemen? Because look at what he had in North Texas.
I don't recall what he had in North Texas, but that's about as apples and oranges as you get as far as offensive linemen. If you get a guy like drafted in North Texas, I mean, they're not coming in as 4- and 5-star players. They're coming in as 2- and 3-star guys that you develop and or you evaluated really well and you find the diamonds in the rough. I don't recall if they were like great offensive lines at North Texas, but that's just, it's hard to compare. I don't think he's super involved in the recruitment of offensive linemen. I think he's going to be a voice that you would hear, because you're going to, talk about the offensive philosophy and things like that. But that's typically, you're going to have your offensive line coach is going to be a big part of that. I think Graham's, very involved when you're talking about the quarterbacks, but I don't believe too much with the offensive linemen.
I think he has some input, but I don't think it's not like this, a situation where he's the main recruiter. But the type of athlete that you're going to recruit at North Texas versus the type of athlete you're going to recruit at USC are just night and day. So I don't think you can really fault Harrell for what he was able to do at North Texas in that sense. It's a completely different ball game in terms of recruiting.
And if it was, so Graham Harrell's like not like known at, he's not like Dante Williams or recruiting, like a T. Martin is, right? He was the offensive coordinator. He would have been super involved, because that's what he does. Like, he's a huge recruiter. I wouldn't say Graham Harrell's like a huge recruiter, but he obviously still, there's going to be some involvement there, but not Not to the level of like when a T. Martin was there, because that was his thing. He was a great recruiter.
Yep. And speaking of recruiting, Ryan, I'm actually going to move on to another email we had, and it's from Don. He says, Ryan, I noticed that Rajon Davis had good things to say about his top four. Great coaches, development of players, etc. But the nicest thing he said about USC was that it was close to home and his family loved SC. But he didn't really say much about Helton, the coaching staff, the football program, which I think confirms your stance that USC recruits itself. Don.
Don, I don't think that's my stance. But there's inherent advantages of being at USC. You're going to be in on guys like a Rajon Davis, even if things aren't going great. But you have to, it's a more competitive landscape now. And I feel like it's one of those things where you, for the most part, you just have to not screw it up. And the 2020 class, USC just screwed up. They just screwed it up. They went 5-7 the year before, all that stuff. Like that's, you know, a big reason why all that was happening. But you can recruit at different levels when you're at USC. You can get a better class than you could ever get at Cal by not trying most years. They didn't last year, but most years, like, you can do that. So in that sense, USC recruits itself. Just your floor is usually a lot higher than other people's floors. And sometimes your floor is higher than other people's ceilings in the Pac-12. And so in that sense, yes, there's a you recruit yourself. But if you want to be, like we mentioned, recruit with the big boys, you actually have to be competent as well. And they've brought in a lot better assistant coaches. And, you know, now you have a top 10 class, which is great. It's not the kind of elite classes that USC had before, even though you got the number one player in the country. That's a huge boost. I think Rajon Davis is most likely going to sign with USC. That'll boost up USC a little bit too. But there's still some holes. I mean, there's, you would like to get a couple of running backs. You'd like to get a couple more, you know, inside linebackers. You know, is there a, you know, five-star left tackle in the class? No. I mean, there's not, and there hasn't been for the last couple of years. So there's certainly been some, that USC didn't recruit itself to that. Like, you want to fill some of those needs. You want to get to that elite status. It's not USC recruits itself. If USC was winning and going to playoffs and stuff, and you didn't try as hard on the recruiting trail, you probably would do even better, you know. But a lot of it's not just like how hard you're recruiting. It's, you know, what are you doing on the field? The better USC is, the better that brand is, I think the more, quote unquote, you know, USC recruits itself becomes a true thing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's there's multiple factors. And I think USC has kind of rested on, oh, well, USC recruits itself. And that's why you've seen the classes they've had, especially when you're not winning. It just doesn't work out. So yes, there are built-in advantages and that put USC above, I would say, most of the Pac-12, if not all of the Pac-12, but you can't just rely on that. And I think that's what we've seen lately. So the fact that USC needs to win, actually have recruiters on the staff, it's a whole combination of things and not just USC being USC.
Yeah, there's only a certain number of programs in the country that can recruit a top three class, and USC is one of them. Like, I mean, like Texas A&M could get like a top five class. I don't know if they could get a top three class. Like, obviously Alabama can, and Ohio State can, and Clemson and stuff. USC is one of those teams, but you can't just be USC and get that. Like, you want to have that kind of class. You want to have the kind of depth that Alabama has, as dudes just come in off, you know, oh, that guy's a five star. He's been sitting on the bench for 2 years. Like, you know, what has Najee Harris done, you know, for the last couple of years? Like, not much. He came as a five-star that would be the corner piece of every, you know, program in the country. He, like, waits his turn there. And now is,
and
like,
USC recruited him, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he was a California kid, you know. USC ended up getting Stephen Carr, which, you know, great player too. But, yeah, there's definitely advantages doing that. USC is one of those only programs that could be a top three recruiter year in and year out. But you got to be better on the field than what you're seeing right now to do that. Yep, exactly. You want to do a voicemail?
Sure.
All right. Here's a voicemail for you, Keely.
Hello, this question is for Keely and Ryan. And I just wanted to call in, and I think this, there's a little bit of rose-colored glasses going on with the whole Urban Meyer deal. I know that he's not, you know, technically an option at this point. But even if he were to be an option, I'm not saying that you wouldn't necessarily take him as a head coach, because clearly he's been very successful. But I do think there's an issue of rose-colored glasses to an extent, because I wonder if people remember that in his years at Ohio State, he only made the playoff twice and got blown out once. Like shut out, blown out once, not just like beat badly, like he was shut out. And he's an offensive coach, so that to me, that pretty much falls on him for getting shut out. So, you know, I mean, he's obviously a great coach, but you know, I think there's a little bit of rose-colored glasses, and I mean, they honestly, he even kind of had the same problems that Pete did post-Texas of losing games during the season he shouldn't have lost, and that impacting the postseason. So, so anyways, you know, maybe, obviously he's a very, very good coach, and I'm not saying whether you do or don't take him, but I just wanted to kind of address, you guys kind of address the rose-colored glasses aspect of Urban Meyer in with our boards. Fight on, Jason Longhorn Country.
Jason, what's up, buddy? Yeah, you know, it's sort of like, let's see, let me give you a food analogy. It's sort of like, okay, we don't even do a food analogy. You're like, oh, you know what? You know, I won the lottery. But, you know, I saw over there was like a 5% tax for the poor. Like, oh, it's not even worth it. You know, like what? I got $300 million. It's just, but I had to pay that extra 5%. This sucks. You know, like what? You guys have rose colored glasses about this lottery stuff. Did you know about the tax I just had to pay? Like the 5%? That's what I feel this is like, Keeley. He only made the playoffs twice. Well, he won a national championship. I think he got blown out by Clemson the year they won, if I'm not mistaken. He's won three national championships. I mean, he won a couple at Florida too. You remember those? Like, do you remember Tim Tebow and all those guys? You remember going undefeated at Utah? Like, I'm not sure what kind of rose-colored glasses you want, but there's no, like, if you had your pick of coaches that are available right now, there is no better. Like, he would be, I don't think anyone would argue he would be the best football coach USC could possibly hire. And it's not even close. So I don't understand your stance on rose-colored glasses. Tell me where I'm wrong, Keely.
I get it. I know it's unpopular, but I wasn't like as huge on the whole Urban Meyer train as I think everyone else was. I totally agree. He's a great coach and everything. I think across the board, there's just a sense of desperation from USC fans where some of the maybe not Urban Meyer, but like some of the other names that they've thrown out of possible replacements for Helton have just been like, what? That doesn't make any sense for all the other complaints you have about Helton. Like even they've thrown out guys who've never been a head coach before or stuff like that. All the things that we say were issues with the Clay Helton hire to begin with. So I think there is a level of desperation with USC fans right now where they're kind of just throwing out whoever kind of as a life raft just because they're so over Helton as a head coach for USC. So I think there is a little bit of desperation. I don't know if you can apply that to Urban Meyer though. How about that?
Yeah, and if I'll try a food analogy here. So if you're going, okay, like you've got a restaurant, right? And you have like a pool of chefs to choose from to run your restaurant. It's been a great restaurant. It's been run to the ground. You're going to play somebody. And you have like Gordon Ramsay is one of the choices. And then there's like, I don't know, the guy that runs the Denny's down the street and then some other good, you know, decent ones. But like Gordon Ramsay is like by far and away like, okay, he's amazing. Now, the food will be the best, right? Like you're not going to compare like the food. You'll get the most publicity. Like it will be so recruiting wise, like you would get the best recruiting just by hiring Urban Meyer. If he just stayed in his closet all day and didn't come out and do anything, you would still recruit better just because you have Urban Meyer. So Gordon Ramsay would bring the most buzz. He would have the best food, but he's kind of like prickly, right? Like there's off of, you know, out of the kitchen issues with Gordon Ramsay. Like if you have any like moral issues with Urban Meyer stuff, whatever it is. But as far as like running your restaurant, like there's a clear number one. Like if you just want the best football team for USC, like bring me somebody that would be better than Urban Meyer. I don't think anyone could make an argument that would do that. But there's obviously more that goes into it. But I, yeah, to me, it's not like rose colored glasses. You're like, yeah, you know, Urban Meyer got blown out by Clemson that one year. You know, it's did they like beat Alabama when they were like, you know, crushing everybody and they were the number four seed and then win the national championship? Oh, they did that too. Oh, did they win like a couple national championships at Florida where he turned them around? And did he go undefeated at Utah? Like, he's done it, Bowling Green. He's done it everywhere. So to me, this is like a no-brainer. If you just said, who, you have infinite money, you have infinite whatever, you have power, who would be the best guy to coach USC football? Like, I'm going Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And the question is, like, what's that noise for, Ryan?
I don't know. I'm just like, I get it. Like, if you just put all the other stuff aside, like, is there a better football coach? Like, I don't think there is.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you want Nick Saban? Like, Nick Saban, yes, he's better. Like, he's the best
sure.
of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'd rather take Urban Meyer over like Pete Carroll, who's like 70 years old now, you know? I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's just proven track record from place to place. And I think part of the process that USC administration would go through, they're not just looking for like, who's the fly, you know, the best argument, like Andy Enfield was like the darling of that tournament, right? When, they go to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
I don't think you just get the guy that's hot right now. I'm not saying, you know, they would put a lot more research into, okay, did Andy Enfield, how did he build it? Where was he before? All that stuff. All that stuff might be great too. I just don't know enough about basketball. If they're putting that together, yes. There's everything you'd look at, what Urban Meyer's done, you know, what did teams do when he's left? You know, has he been able to do it multiple places, multiple ways? He has, you know, it's just, he changes things. And we get to see how his mind works on the Fox broadcast. And every time he talks, you're like, yeah, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. So,
yeah.
To me, I mean, that's just me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to belabor the point, but I'm not agreeing with you, Jason, in the Longhorn country.
Yep. Sorry, Jason.
Welcome, Sark, to your Longhorn country, by the way.
That's crazy to me. I don't know why. It's just so hard for my mind to wrap around, like, to wrap my mind around the fact that, like, Sark standing next to Bevo, and like, it's just weird to me. I don't know.
I mean, I did Austin radio. It's funny. I got a text, or a couple of texts from people that were in Austin. They're like, hey, you're blowing up down here. I'm like, what do you mean I'm blowing up? Like, oh, you're, cause I was doing some radio show. I think it was one of their popular ones. And they're like, oh, they're promoting it. They're going to talk to Ryan Abram about Sark. I'm like, oh God. Okay. I didn't realize this. But Texas wanted Urban Meyer, right? Like they wanted to try to bring him in. They're bringing in Sark. I think Sark could work. I mean, we got to cover him. It was like, I mean, it's some of the craziest stuff we've ever seen covering college football. And I hope, you know, all the demons are past him and he's, you know, recovered and is going to be great there in Austin. You wish him all the best and, you know, really hope he does. But I would say there's a pretty big chasm between what your likelihood of Urban Meyer succeeding and likelihood of Sark succeeding. I think Sark can be successful, but I mean, there's one to me, Urban Meyer is much more of a sure thing, you know? And so you got a great guy. They have all the resources in the world. And the next guy they got was Sark. To me, that just shows like, yeah, there's this, he's a white whale, right? Like, you don't even know he's talking with the Jaguars and the Chargers. You know, he might go to the NFL. But you know, I don't think he's going to end up at USC. I just don't think politically, I don't think any of that makes sense. For football, it makes a ton of sense. But for the other stuff, the way everything's structured right now, I think it would be really tough for USC to bring him in.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a viable option. And the thing I've heard too, and I don't know how legit this source was, but I had a source say that like Urban is kind of out on the whole like player like empowerment movement. And I think that's why you're seeing him go next to the NFL, because he's much more in that mindset of, hey, we're professionals and we're going to just coach you like I'm the guy. I don't know how to describe it, Ryan, but I had a sense and from a source that he just doesn't really, he's not really on board with the way things are evolving with college players and like how empowered they are at this day and age. I don't know if that's what I've heard. And so I think that's why he's more focused on the NFL right now. So just some food for thought.
That would be interesting. And I mean, I think a guy like Dabo Swinney is sort of in that category. Like, he does things his own way, right? He'll
treat
the coronavirus the way he wants to treat it. He's not necessarily going to be, you know, as PC maybe as you want things to be now, as the landscape has changed, right? But he's a proven winner and won champ. He's at a place where he's already won championships. They're not going to say, get out of here, Dabo. We don't like, you know, your politically correct, you know, incorrect stances on certain issues. He's a winner there. Like, if Urban Meyer was already at USC and then it sort of developed, that'd be one thing. But yeah, it's hard to bring somebody in if you don't feel that they're, quote, I guess, you know, PC enough or whatever for what the current times are.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. We have an interesting email from Don, and I maybe you can speak into this, Ryan. But he says, Ryan, Graham Harrell, I don't believe Clay Helton knew who Graham Harrell was until Keeley started promoting Harrell as the best choice for OC. If Harrell leaves, who does Keeley believe should be the best OC for USC? Harrell is great for producing good quarterback passing stats, but I don't believe that his system will produce great football teams. I have not bought entirely in on Keaton Slovis. Difficult when the offense is mainly schemed for big passing stats. Who gets to the playoff first, Keaton or JT? Don. First off, hey. Can I just clear the record?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think I was the one promoting Graham Harrell, and I don't think Clay Helton heard me and then decided to make a choice off of that. So I'm just putting that out there for the record, Don.
According to a source, that's the reason Graham Harrell hired. Clay Helton hired Graham Harrell is because of Keeley's recommendation. My source is wrong? Okay.
Your source is wrong, Ryan.
It's funny about that. Like, we might have mentioned someone. So I think when you're talking about that, it's hard to remember exactly how it all went down because the Cliff Kingsbury stuff was very strange.
Yeah.
But he was a pretty obvious one. We talked about him when we had to do a new hot board for offensive coordinator, because he was sort of like, you know, Cliff Kingsbury light, right? Like, he was, you know, hadn't had the success in college that Kingsbury did, or the, you know, even the job title, but it was sort of, you know, he was another Mike Leach quarterback, was going to run something similar. And so, you know, it turns out to be different. You know, he's not someone that's having the quarterback run as much as like a Kingsbury does. And, you know, you're seeing what he's able to do with with the Arizona Cardinals and stuff, and with a dynamic athlete at quarterback that's just running all over the place and, you know, making a lot of plays happen. So they're definitely different guys, just like, you know, Mike Leach and Harrell are different, and Mike Leach and Kingsbury are different. It'll be interesting to see if Harrell does leave, which I don't think is going to happen at this point, but who knows? It's college football, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Which direction they would go. My guess is they're trying to keep in this sort of, air raidy kind of offense and find someone else from that tree. I haven't really gone into it as far as like researching replacements for a coach that doesn't need to be replaced right now. But that's my feeling is that Clay Helton does like the offense. Does he like the fact that it was last in the Pac-12 in rushing? Probably not. He shouldn't. I think that's something that's got to be addressed this offseason, even though Clayton's not talking about it. I think it's probably got to be something they have to address behind the scenes, but he's not coming out and admitting. Harvey Hyde said this, Keeley. He just like to come out and say, hey, man, we were last in the Pac-12 in rushing. That's not good enough. Instead of be like, well, we ran really well against Arizona State, and then we had that one weird game, and then there was this one, and you kind of explain it all the way. But then UCLA, we had Vavai was great. It's like, okay, so the team ran for 100 yards. Like, it wasn't like you had one guy do well and the other two backs did nothing. He sort of was explaining it away as opposed to just, this is an opportunity, right, to say it wasn't good enough. I told you we wanted to rush for 175 yards a game, and we did for two games, and then we fell off a cliff. I need to make sure that doesn't happen. Me and Graham are going to sit down, and we're going to change things this offseason. And part of it is getting a new offensive line coach, instead of saying, here's the statement we made on getting rid of the offensive line coach, which he did to Ryan Carsey with the LA Times. Come out and say, this wasn't good enough, you know? And I get you want to be positive, but I'm just not understanding why you can't come out and say something like that, Keeley.
Well, I've had this issue from very early on in like the Clay Helton era with just the messaging and the PR. There's always just some positive spin, which I would have liked better if they just have a sense of reality in what they're saying, you know, instead of trying to spin it away or make it seem better than it is, like you said, Ryan, just coming to terms with what we can all see, you know, hey, we didn't get it done with running and we need to, we'll self-scout this offseason. But then on the, to play devil's advocate to my own point, when Clay Helton has done that, you know, like, hey, we're going to address penalties this offseason, that doesn't happen. It's not really fixed. Like, the things that Clay Helton has identified as areas of fixing haven't really been fixed. I mean, turnover margin was the one thing that was fixed, but I think that's more credit to Todd Orlando and USC's DB's coaches and the fact that they're getting turnovers in that sense. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's one of those things where I don't think Clay Helton can kind of satisfy in either way he goes. You know, he could spin it positively and we're going to be frustrated by that, or he'll say it and then we won't really see fixes. So can you really help? I don't know. But that's something where, you know, this offense, I think you have to take the good and you have to self-scout the bad this offseason, because you have two seasons of, hey, the first season, Keenan Slovis did so well and put up numbers where he was mentioned in Heisman conversations for the next season. And then you have to self-scout, hey, why did Keenan Slovis look the way he did? Why did the run game kind of take a step back? Why did the offense kind of regress as the season progressed? So I think you need to identify what worked well, obviously, and then identify what went wrong this past season. Is it just Keenan Slovis needs to work? Is it just that they need to be more creative in the run schemes? I don't know, but I think that there definitely needs to be self-scouting. And I think this offense has the potential to be good or be more electric in that sense, but whether or not they're coming to terms with the fact that they need to reevaluate some things, I don't know, you know. And that's something we've talked about a lot, is like, after the Cotton Bowl, was there a sense of reality of, hey, yeah, we looked okay, but we just got killed in the trenches. How do we fix that? You know, have they learned from those mistakes? I don't know. You know, that's kind of a long rant for your question, Ryan. But yeah, I don't know. They need to piece together what works coming into this next season.
Yeah, I like the rants. It's good. And his last part, who makes the playoffs first? It's JT Daniels, Don. Like, USC, Keaton's got one more year probably at USC, and I don't think they're making the playoffs. So I don't know. What do you think, Keely?
No, I definitely think JT.
Yeah. Just, I mean, Georgia already has like a playoff talent, you know, like playoff caliber roster. So they got a better shot than USC right now.
Yeah. The pieces are there for Georgia, and they're in the SEC, and I think they just get a boost no matter what. So it's definitely JT. And that's
Like, the road is easier to, like, win the conference at USC. Like, you don't have to beat Alabama to win the Pac-12. Yeah. But you can finish second in the SEC and still make the playoff fairly easily. So, yeah, I think it's JT Daniels for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Alrighty, we have one last email. And it's from Steve in San Diego, who is referencing an email we got last week from AJ. He says, Ryan and Keely, I want to give AJ and LA a half thumbs up or half vote of confidence on his comments on Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna. I agree, as alumni, we do focus too much on the immovable object right now in Clay Helton. However, here are other things the dynamic duo could do since Clay Helton is untouchable. Training staff. Why can't we get people fired, retired, or just flat out sent packing? My Lord, some of these people are still left there from when I worked for the football team from the 91 to 95 seasons as a student. This staff needs to go. Burn it all down and start over. They can't get players healthy, period. Recovery times are longer than my 91-year-old grandma when she goes in for an operation. If a player gets a bruised finger, they're out for half a season. When the next coach does get here, and he will, just not soon enough, the existing training staff is almost as big of a liability as the damage Clay is doing to the program right now. The administration. We have not heard of any additional turnover in the administration at the athletic department. The dynamic duo made a splash firing some dead weight. We have not heard of any additional personnel changes for over a year now. We need more fresh blood, but we have not had any in any other aspects of the athletic department for over a year. I agree, Bone and company are a major upgrade for the previous section. And I do give credit for the changes they have made. They just need to get out a bigger axe and cut down some more deep-rooted trees. There have been some improvements. I completely agree. But there are other things that are obvious even to the casual USC fan that are well below subpar and do not involve firing someone with the initials CH. Steve in San Diego. That was a mouthful, Ryan, but a long
time for everybody's name. Way to get through that. I like the little, like, first of all, he acknowledged, like, okay, we're going to say you can't fire Clay Helton. Now, he still mentioned firing Clay Helton like three times or so in the email, but just sort of like knew, like, okay, we're going to assume that doesn't happen. There are some interesting points there. I don't know enough about the training staff. I mean, if it has been a lot of the same people since 1991, like, yeah, then, you know, there probably should be some turnover somewhere. If that's happening, and yeah, I thought there might be some other bigger athletic department hires that they haven't made. I don't know if the pandemic had a huge part of it. My guess is it did. But they also kind of seem like a crew that sort of keeps it the circle tight. You know, I don't know if they're going to bring in a whole bunch of people. But if there was a pandemic, it'd be curious to see Keeley if they would have brought in a few more like high profile, you know, athletic administrative type of guys to kind of help them out.
Yeah. I mean, there have been moves. I just don't think they're as like flashy as the casual fan would think that they are. Like, they're not going to be newsworthy items that the fan would know about. So there have been moves. It's just like, it hasn't been like that one day where we saw like the mainstays of the athletic department go. But I don't know, Ryan. I think it's still a work in progress. So I understand where Steve's coming from, but I think it's still a work in progress.
Yeah. And as far as like the like, that's something that should be evaluated. Like I said, I'm no training's expert, but, and I don't know if they have, to be honest, I'm not sure. I mean, that's something we could try to find out. It's like, hey, is this something that, you know, maybe there were adjustments made that we didn't hear about or something, but there've definitely been enough injuries where you're just like, well, you've blown out some strength and conditioning coaches, but, you know, is there other aspects too that need to get better? Or is it just better training for the training staff that's there now? I don't know. I'm not sure. Or that might not even be a problem at all. Like, that's not really, you know, I don't want to be speaking out my butt on this, Keely, but just, you know, try to answer the question.
But there's enough data points, if you will, that there is something wrong somewhere in USC's recovery operation for its players. You know, just like I go back to Porter Gustin standing in the middle of the Coliseum field because he can't get a cart because he can't walk back to the Coliseum locker room. Like, how does that happen? Or why does Daniel Mwanabebe have such a long process? Or what's happening with Solomon Tuilalapupu? You know, stuff like that where I like I said, I'm not obviously a doctor, so maybe that's more on the player's recovery than it actually is the recovery surgery process itself. So who knows? But there's enough evidence where something is not quite right with the way that USC's players recover and how they are their injuries are identified and maybe sometimes not identified correctly. So it's something that's worth looking into. And I honestly just don't know if USC has done that yet. So something to definitely look out for.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. There's too much smoke around the injuries and like players like leaving the program and then playing somewhere else, but they couldn't play. You know, there's just been too much of that something isn't quite right. Right. Like something's not right.
Yeah. It's not what we've seen from other programs as far as certain injuries and how they recover. And we've heard stories from guys who transferred and speak more candidly. Like, sometimes it just hasn't gone well with the medical staff, and that's something that definitely needs to be evaluated. So we'll have to ask about that because it's a key part, and that's a good point by Steve.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening here to this episode of the Peristyle Podcast. My apologies. We were supposed to do a tunnel vision on Sunday. I really just wanted to watch my Steelers play, and then they lost to the Browns. So I shouldn't have canceled the show because, you know, it would have been fun to talk. But we'll try to do one this week. We're setting up. Don't think Shotgun's going to be able to make it, so we're going to try to find a replacement. But look for Tunnel Vision coming back on Sunday. My apologies for not, not making that one happen. I should have just sucked it up and did the show. All right. Well, Keely, good stuff. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
All right. And everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
you've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.